beware of pretty faces that you find. A pretty face can hide an evil mind. Oh, be careful what you say, or you'll give yourself away. Odds are you won't live to see tomorrow.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Robert Young-Pelton, an author, filmmaker, journalist, and explorer. He's the founder and publisher of SomaliaReport.com and has had first-hand perspective on the war on terror from direct contact with the world's most infamous jihadi, rebel, and insurgent groups. His books include The World's Most Dangerous Places, Come Back Alive, Three Worlds Gone Mad, License to Kill, Hired Guns in the War on Terror, and his autobiography, The Adventurist. He recently returned from Afghanistan, where he spent more than a month in the field with the U.S. Special Forces. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Young-Pelton.
Hi, Ian. How are you doing?
So you've really know this fraternity of Special Forces. And there's a Navy SEAL, Brandon Webb, and a former Green Beret and Ranger, Jack Murphy. They claim in a new ebook that's coming out on Tuesday, they claim to have, they call the book Benghazi, The Definitive Report. And it's being promoted as dropping some bombshells about what happened in Benghazi and about the palace coup against Petraeus. From what you've seen of what they're saying, how does it strike you in terms? Because they, as far as I know, they haven't had any direct contact. They haven't actually been in the field in Libya, either of them, have they?
Right. No. I mean, what you're hearing about Benghazi is very multidimensional, because you have the State Department initiative to overthrow Gaddafi. You have JSOC, which is a global anti-terrorism fighting organization. You have contractors who are involved in a $40 million weapons buyback. You have the Libyan or the proto-Libyan government. And then you have the sort of political football that sort of flared up before the election as to the response by President Obama. And then you have the former State Secretary of State, Clinton, sort of legacy fixing or shaping. So there's a whole bunch of things that collide around Benghazi. But the reality was, this was an extremely serious lack of security and a very predictable event.
And with Lindsey Graham now threatening to hold up the nomination of John Brennan to head up the CIA unless the administration comes clean on Benghazi, they've already had a House and Senate hearings on it. What happened there? Didn't they get what they wanted? Why? I understand that Lindsey Graham is facing a Tea Party challenge in 2014, but what's your understanding of his constant? He said, in fact, after those hearings, that Hillary Clinton got away with murder.
Yeah, what the right wants to hear is that Hillary Clinton was incompetent, that she was a political appointee, that she spent most of her time playing Where's Waldo to rack up brownie points for her 2016 run, while she didn't pay attention to very simple but very serious housekeeping in terms of creating political sort of footprints there, creating proper security profiles. And what you're actually reading in the press is the people on the ground are chatting like schoolgirls. The RSOs, the contractors, the security people are all very vocal about how this event occurred, because they were ignored by the Secretary of State in their effort to create a very low security profile.
Well, my understanding that the low security profile, in particular for the ambassador who was visiting a consulate, which is sort of nothing more than a sort of nice suburban home from what I can tell, right, that what this whole thing has been confused with is that there was actually the real operation was a CIA operation, wasn't it?
Yeah. The key to remember here is that the Benghazi was not a consulate. It was an annex. Tripoli was where the consulate was, and there were somewhat level of security problems, but the real security problems were in Benghazi. And Stevens didn't spend a lot of time there. He had friends there, and he chose to visit on the 11th of September, which was very odd. And if you look at his schedule is very open and sort of amorphous. which kind of freaked out his security people, because Benghazi was where the CIA operation was, to essentially create militias, buy back weapons, and to sort of mess with the al-Qaeda element there.
And that CIA building is where the actual, that's where the SEALs were actually killed, where the mortars were dropped.
Right. They weren't SEALs. They were working for Marcus Vance Marcus, who's a sort of Blackwater type company who rents out tier one people. And those two gentlemen were directly involved in purchasing or getting back about $40 million worth of surface-to-air missiles.
And what are these guys are claiming, these two special forces guys, in the so-called definitive book on Benghazi, the definitive report?
Well, it's not really a book. It's 83 pages, and it's a Kindle, so it's more of a memo. But what they're claiming is that there was a secret operation run by John Brennan, which is true. You know, JSOC has a responsibility for the entire world.
And that's the Joint Special Operations Command.
Correct. And these people go out anywhere in the world and take out foreign jihadis under the banner of al-Qaeda. And that there was activity in Libya to attrit or decimate sort of growing al-Qaeda elements, and that the attack on the Benghazi compound was essentially payback. And you've seen this in other al-Qaeda attacks around the world, where they go after the intelligence centers, whether it's the consulates or the embassies in Nairobi or Uganda or wherever. So this was definitely payback for the planning and the operations that Stevens was hired to do.
Yeah, but these guys are claiming that John Brennan did not brief Stevens, aren't they?
You know, I doubt very much that Brennan would brief Stevens on a mission level. In other words, they go out and do this on a regular basis. But I'm pretty sure that Stevens would be read in on generally what they're doing there and who the groups were. The funny thing was that Stevens was basically briefing Clinton and the security people at State about how dangerous it was there, because there had been attacks on the British embassy and other areas. There had actually been a car bomb right in front of the Benghazi annex. So he was briefing these people on how dangerous it was, and they were constantly, they, meaning the State Department, was constantly saying, don't bother asking for more security.
And what was their reasoning behind that?
Well, they'd made a decision early on, they being Hillary Clinton, that they wanted to pretend that Libya was doing fine. So they had the Brits go in with their very famous low-profile approach and keep armed guards, keep American presence, American boots on the ground to a minimum. At the same time, they were ramping up this covert or clandestine campaign to eliminate al-Qaeda elements. So it was a left-hand, right-hand problem.
Well, but and my understanding is that the actual attack on the annex that killed the ambassador. First of all, I don't think they even knew he was there. There are only 23 bullet holes in the entire building. It was they sort of set it on fire, and he happened to escape to the top floor, and where he died of smoke inhalation. So, was that just a diversionary attack, and the real one was on the CIA station?
No, they knew he was there, and the attack was very unusual in that most of the military activity was blocking movements at intersections, and the actual attack was not a sort of, you know, explosive attack meant to kill people, but actually using diesel fuel to smoke out the people inside the consulate. This was an inside job, and get them to flee. Once they were fleeing, my guess, and this is just my guess, is that they would be then captured and used as hostages to swap for people that had been captured by the JSOC activity. So when they then moved to the CIA compound, it was a completely different attack. It was a very, very violent gun battle between the al-Qaeda militia and the people inside the CIA building. So you had two different attacks, two different places, two different methodologies.
So it was an inside job, and as much as the Ambassador Stevens's guards were tipped off and they just disappeared. And so they set the place on fire in the hope to drive him out in order to capture him, just like they did in this recent attack in Algeria, right? They wanted to grab hostages.
That's exactly right. And the al-Qaeda in that region is just a sort of a burgeoning thing, and it needs funding and it needs the money and hostages to build its way up. I mean, the people in Algeria, the al-Qaeda unit in Algeria, was using almost $70 million worth of ransoms paid by the French government to fund its activity. So it's clear to me that Ambassador Stevens alive would be a much more lucrative and politically useful tool than to just kill him.
Well, but so Robert Young Pelton, again, author, filmmaker, journalist, explorer. He recently returned from Afghanistan, where he spent over a month in the field with the U.S. Special Forces. So I'm just trying to figure out what Senator Lindsey Graham is grandstanding over. I mean, first of all, he said he was also going to block confirmation of Chuck Hagel to become the next Secretary of Defense. They're voting on that on Tuesday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So it sounds like he's lost that one, but he could well hold up Brennan. I mean, he's having this hissy fit over this whole thing. And my understanding is that the subtext here is that, you know, he's, you'd think that a confirmed bachelor like Lindsey Graham would be just butt out of this. But wasn't the ambassador just there on a private personal trip? And would that explain why there wasn't so little security? I mean, is there any, really, you know, the Fox drumbeat is right about Hillary. She blew it.
Right. And keep in mind, you know, Stevens was an openly gay man. He had a boyfriend in Benghazi. He'd spent a lot of time there. His schedule was discovered in the garbage floating around the annex. He had a very loose schedule. It was unthinkable that he would actually go to Benghazi on September 11th, but he'd left most of that day open. So, you know, his private affairs that day are well known amongst the security industry, and they haven't really brought that to light. And we don't.
Well, but is that the subtext? Is that what Graham is using, that nobody wants to talk about this because they simply shouldn't talk about it? And in fact, I'm not even sure that we should talk about it.
Well, here's the thing. There are a lot of skeletons that people are pointing to, but nobody's found those skeletons. I don't think Ambassador Stevens' sexual orientation is relevant to what led to the attack. I think the fact that there was so little effort spent to protect him is really the focus here. And secondly, there was a disastrous response to the very violent attack at the CIA annex. There are people in place that normally come to the rescue of these people. There are lots of air assets. We ran a huge multi-billion-dollar air campaign, and suddenly no one's able to come to the defense of these Americans who are trapped by a small Al-Qaeda unit. I think that's what they want to grind in to the Democrats, to say, hey, you can't fight wars like this. You can't pretend these wars are secret and they can be run on a shoestring.
Yeah, but by and large, isn't there a problem that Obama has a pretty good national security record? He got bin Laden. He's getting out of these ridiculous wars.
He's taking credit for money and things that were approved before he came into office in 2008. The whole drone program, the idea of murdering your opponents using covert assassination techniques, is a Petraeus baby. And it's got nothing to do with Obama. He just knows that it's politically expedient to kill people when people aren't watching. So he still has yet to reap the downside of targeted assassination. I mean, it's just on the upswing after 2008.
But by and large, they haven't really been able to, the Republicans, who normally own national security, they haven't really been able to sully his record. He's been, you know, and he's, let's face it, most of the criticism of Obama comes from the political left. They think he's too right-wing and too pro-military, and he seems to have gone out of his way.
Well, President Obama came into office just as the funding and the planning for this covert activities came into place. What's happening now is that we are shutting down traditional warfare, in other words, shipping soldiers back who sit in FOBs and get shot at and blown up with IEDs, and shifting over to proxy wars like in Somalia and Mali, and also shifting into the darkness so that you may never know when somebody gets killed by a drone or by a proxy force, which is politically expedient because it doesn't drain the resources or the political capital of the Democratic Party. And as to whether the Republicans can make hay with that, I think the Republicans are somewhat incompetent in understanding how wars are fought.
You mean wars of the future?
Right.
Yeah. So they're, what then do you make of this claim in this new book by Brandon Webb, the former Navy SEAL, and Jack Murphy, the former Green Beret, Benghazi, the definitive report? I mean, I had Bob Baer, the former CIA officer, on I think a couple of months ago, at the, just after the Petraeus resignation, and he was pretty clear about the fact that he believed that that Petraeus was done in by the CIA, that they didn't like him, that it was a sort of inside job, if you will, because he was dumped on them by Obama, who wanted to get Petraeus off the street because Fox News were recruiting him to become president and run against him. And the CIA were never happy with this guy, and then he acted in a very imperious way, wanting his pineapple 2 pounds a day, cored but not sliced, and, you know, having people, you know, CIA officers hand out water bottles on his jogs, and, you know, he's...
Well, here's the bottom line, is, you know, when you bring a new director and you've got 90 days to break all the furniture and to make all the changes, but if you're saddled with an affair with someone who's quite public and writing a book about what you're doing, you're easy to take down. And the agency does have components where they will take you down by simply leaking information to the media and then suddenly find yourself on the front page of the New York Times. So I'm sure that Petraeus went in and started breaking furniture and they said, oh, well, I guess you forgot about this thing. So the CIA has probably a lawyer-heavy function right now because they deal in so much sort of shifting of the law in terms of targeted assassination. I think they're doing just fine. They have fantastic intelligence. They've had 10 years to gather all this stuff. What they didn't want was yet another person reinventing the CIA.
And it's not about the idea that he was trying to push them into becoming a paramilitary force. They already are a paramilitary force, right?
If you look at the org chart with JSOC, CIA, and all these special operations or special mission groups, the clandestine service, the CIA, is doing just fine killing people. As a matter of fact, that's the big criticism of Obama, is how many people are you killing in these remote areas that we don't know about?
Well, that's why I think the Republicans are desperate, aren't they? I mean, it seems like Lindsey Graham is having a hissy fit and baying into the wind here.
Yeah, I think what we need to do is focus on how we're going to fight wars around the world. We don't have wars where we sit and line up against the other troops. We have al-Qaeda franchises in over 24 countries now, and we have the ability for people to strike at us inside our own country. So I think that's where the agency works outside the country, the FBI works inside. I think they need to reboot and say, how are we going to protect Americans going forward, not to rehash problems that were created, you know, years ago.
Well, but this whole thing, Benghazi, that was Fox News made it an issue during the election, as you pointed out. But it just won't go away. And I guess it's just an excuse for them.
Here's what happened. I mean, the response to Benghazi was massively incompetent. You had Susan Rice on the chat shows talking about this video. You had all the people on the inside knowing exactly what it was. And you had Hillary Clinton caught with her pants down, or pantsuits down, trying to backpedal on this. And then you had this whole legacy thing where they were going after her in the dying years or dying days of her Secretary of State job, trying to pin Benghazi on her, which I think politicized the whole thing and kept the focus off the murders of 4 Americans.
And it's still political grist for the mill, even after the hearings. I mean, you know, it's as I say, I think Lindsey Graham's probably just posturing because he's got a Tea Party opponent. I can't imagine. Do you think he's going to be able to stop Brennan?
No, of course not. But I think what he should do is hang the Benghazi albatross around Hillary Clinton and get on with business.
Well, he's tried that. He said she got away with murder. But, I mean, they had their chance, didn't they, when she was testifying. She actually turned it around and she came across off looking pretty good.
Right. It's a typical Clinton stage-managed event. But the bottom line, it was her security profiles that led to the deaths of 4 Americans. Had she listened to the people that worked there, the RSOs, the security providers, the military, AFRICOM, there would have been very, very stiff security, and he wouldn't have gone holidaying on September 11th to the annex.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Robert Young-Pelton.
My pleasure, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Robert Young-Pelton, author, filmmaker, journalist, and explorer. He's the founder and publisher of SomaliaReport.com and has had first-hand perspective on the war on terror from direct contact with the world's most infamous jihadi, rebel, and insurgent groups. His books include The World's Most Dangerous Places, Come Back Alive, Three Worlds Gone Mad, License to Kill, Hired Guns, and The War on Terror, and his autobiography, The Adventurist. He recently returned from Afghanistan, where he spent over a month in the field with the U.S. Special Forces. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me and the Facebook and the conversation continues at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.
The headline written down.